Welcome to Australian Women Preach, a podcast that aims to raise women's voices in preaching the gospel. Our intention is to model the church we want to be, inclusive, diverse, and welcoming. Brought to you by WATAC, Women and the Australian Church, and The Grail in Australia. This week, we have the privilege of listening deeply to First Nations woman Sherry Balcom, who, using the gospel as a springboard, shares her hopes for this country we now call Australia, her wisdom around the upcoming referendum, and her work towards creating the first Aboriginal rite of the Catholic Church written by First Nations people. Sherry is currently the executive leader of the Aboriginal Catholic Ministry, the National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders Victorian Councillor, the recipient of the NATSIC Service to the Community Award in 2022, and a member of the Plenary Council. Sherry recorded this conversation with the AWP team on Wurundjeri country in the Kulin Nations.
Hi, I'm Sherry Balcom, the leader of the Aboriginal Catholic Ministry, Victoria. I'm a Jabbagai Ocala woman from Cape York, far north Queensland. I was born on Wurundjeri country, and this is where the Aboriginal Catholic Ministry is, on Wurundjeri country in the Kulin Nations in Victoria. I've been at the Aboriginal Catholic Ministry for 20 years this year, and so I'll be finishing up at the end of this year. I was looking at the reading that we have, Matthew 14, 22 to 23, and I thought that really does resonate with me. You know, of Jesus walking on water, and I kind of think that's kind of what I'm doing. Particularly now, as part of my last hurrah, I don't know why, I think I'm a little bit crazy. I'm pulling people together from the east coast of Australia, and we're trying to write Aboriginal Catholic Eastern Rite. And so when I read that passage, I kind of thought, gee, that does resonate with me, because at the moment I kind of feel like I'm walking on water, and because we've never had an Aboriginal Rite in Australia, and I think the ones that are out there now have not been written by Aboriginal people. And so the aim of us doing this is that it's an Aboriginal Mass. We have Aboriginal prayers in there, and we have, for example, you know, we've got the Aboriginal Our Father. Well, we're going to create songs and prayers and blessings to be able to insert into that Mass so that it is Catholic, but it's also Aboriginal. And I think that's something that the Aboriginal community is yearning for, because we really don't have a place. We don't have a place. And there have been so many popes for hundreds of years that have talked about the Indigenous people and their contribution. And I think with the Aboriginal Catholic Ministry, that was one of the reasons, one of the things that we started at. I was working at Aboriginal Childcare Agency, and the founding member from here, Aunty Joyce Smith, was working there too, and she was writing submissions to the church because she was working with people from our dry out centres who were supporting each other and praying in each other's homes, and they were sort of going from St Kilda to Broadmeadows and everywhere in between and praying in people's homes. And she said, we really need a place of our own. And so Aunty Joycey had been putting in submissions to the Archdiocese, and they had all been rejected. And then she went up to Alice Springs, and she's heard Pope John Paul speak there. And in part of that speech, I think, which is really the catalyst for the Aboriginal Catholic Ministry, until Aboriginal people and their contribution is joyfully received, the church in Australia won't be the church that Jesus wants it to be. So Aunty Joyce came back and said, the Pope said it. It's got to happen. This has got to happen. You know, it has to. And at the time, Aboriginal Childcare Agency had just employed a submission writer, a lady named Jeannie McIntyre. So Aunty Joyce went to Jeannie McIntyre and said, you speak their language. This is what we want, and gave her all the paperwork and said, can you write it for us? And so Jeannie did that, and she wrote up the submission, and she did speak their language, because they came back straight away and said, yes, yes, we will support you. And I think this place has really, really grown from there. They did a whole renovation, and they virtually pulled the whole place down except for three rooms, I think the chapel, the front room, and the library. And the rest of it was all redone. They built offices and redesigned the chapel, and we had the chapel consecrated too. So then we became a proper church. So we can give it as much as we want. But it's up to the Catholic Church and the wider community to joyfully accept our contribution. And until our contribution is joyfully accepted, then the church in Australia won't be what Jesus wants it to be. So I think for me, that's really putting that back onto the church. You know, you got to joyfully receive us. The very first Aboriginal Mass that was ever done in Australia was created by Bishop Hilton Deacon. Before he was a bishop, I think Archbishop Little asked him to create a Mass, and that was in 1973, if I'm correct. So Bishop Hilton Deacon went off to WA, Northern Territory, and he spent 2 years. He went to university first and studied anthropology for 4 years, and then he went up to, I think it was the Kimberley, and he learnt the language so that he could understand the spirituality. And then he wrote the Mass. And he was always a very big supporter of the Aboriginal Catholic ministry. He was here with Aunty Joyce when Aunty Joyce was the founding member. And he was really a pusher behind that. And he used to always say, this is just the beginning. This is, you know, this isn't an Aboriginal Mass. You need to do it. And he was always saying that to me. Well, he passed away in October last year. And I really felt like he was giving me a kick. He was kicking me saying, Sherry, you need to do this. And so from that, it was from his passing that I really did get spurred on, and I feel like he is there saying, yes, yes, this is what you need to do. And the more people I spoke to, the more interest there was, and there has been great interest from many, many, and not just Aboriginal people, but non-Aboriginal people around Australia, and particularly ones that have worked with Indigenous communities. And so I started planting a few seeds here and there. Last year, I actually did some filming for the dicastery for the Oceana. The lady did that with us. She went over to Rome, and of course, I had the ear of the Pope, and so I was very strong about how we need more support here. And I spoke to her, and she said to me, "Oh, I've got a very good friend." And I said, "Oh, who's your friend?" And she said, "He is the Pope's liturgist." Went, oh, so I thought, well, here we go, you know. And the music man from St. Pat's Cathedral, he's actually taking the first Aboriginal choir to the Sistine Chapel next year. And he said, "I want you to come." I said, "I would love to come." And I said, "And guess what? I've got a Mass that we can present to the Pope." So that's the dream. So I think that's why I feel like I'm walking on water at the moment. And I think particularly with the plenary, you know, we've had this plenary. One of the first things to go over the line was that we need to start listening to Aboriginal people. Guess what? Aboriginal people are saying this is what we want. And so, I think that the big thing on everybody's minds at the moment is the referendum. We're an incredible time in Australia's history. We are in history right now. We're about to turn a page in our country's, you know, in our history. We're about to write a page. I'm very, very passionate. My father was born in Yarrabah Mission, and in the 1950s, he went to Germany as an Australian representative, and he came back from Germany, and he said, "I'm no longer an Aboriginal." He said, "I am now a communist." He said, "It's the first time I've been in my life that I've been treated with dignity, and all of my brothers and sisters deserve to be treated with dignity too." For me, I think, you know, my dad was doing it in the 50s. He was carrying the Aboriginal flag. He was fighting for, you know, for us to have dignity as a peoples. I have been carrying the flag for, you know, 40 years myself. I've been carrying that flag, and I've been fighting for Aboriginal rights and speaking up for Aboriginal people. You know, my kids in Catholic school, the only Aboriginal kids there, but they're all putting their hand up and they're, you know, yes, we are, and they're proud of their Aboriginality. And I think, and my children now who are in their early, you know, late 20s, early 30s, they're stepping into that space now, you know, of fighting for Aboriginal rights. And I think, you know, are we still going to be in this position in another 30 years' time? And if this referendum does not get up, my grandchildren are going to be sitting in the same seat that I'm sitting in now and be, you know, saying, we need voice, truth and treaty. And the ultimate has to be treaty. We're the only country in the Commonwealth that doesn't have treaties with its first peoples. You know, and out of the Commonwealth, I think there's 54 countries. We're the only one in the Commonwealth that don't have a treaties with its First Peoples. 38 of those countries are republics. They're republics. You know, I mean, we just had last year, we had the 50th anniversary of the Tent Embassy. Australians should be ashamed of themselves that Aboriginal people still have a tent that's manned 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, at the back of Old Parliament House that's been there for 50 years. If that's not asking for a voice, what is it? I can't see why we shouldn't have a voice at a table that's making decisions about us. You know, we're closing the gap. The gap's getting bigger. You know, we've got more kids in out-of-home care now than we did in 1997 when they did the Bringing Them Home report. We've had over 500 black deaths in custody since they did the Royal Commission. Things aren't working. The incarceration rates are going up. Our health is going down. There's so many problems. And the government keeps throwing money at close the gap. The gap's getting bigger, people. Can you see that? For me, it's like, you know, keep putting your hand in the fire and expecting something different to happen. We need to be at the table that are making decisions about our lives. And I think that that is one of the most important things that for Aboriginal people. But the ultimate has to be a treaty. We have to have a treaty. A country can't look forward until they look back and acknowledge what's happened. And Australia hasn't. You know, we don't talk about the stolen generation. Oh, it's really sad. And, oh, yeah, we don't really want to talk about that. You know, and if we don't do that, we're heading down a really dangerous path for Aboriginal people. You know, we're below the refugees in this country. We've got our families are living in shocking poverty in this country. We're one of the richest countries in the world. You know, why are our people living in poverty? Places like Norway and Finland and Sweden and that when they mine on their traditional country, the Indigenous people get 80% of the profits. Can you imagine if Aboriginal people had 5% of the profits? Gina Rinehart's one of the richest women in the world. Imagine if Aboriginal people got paid a measly 5% of profits in this country. We could fix up what's wrong with us. We could get fresh water out to communities. We could get decent homes. We could have schools where our kids can engage. Friend up in Northern Territory there, ringing me one day and saying to me, "Oh, mate," he said, "I'm sitting in the car park at Coles and it just breaks my heart looking at my brothers here who have just lost their spirit." You know, we need to do something to bring that back. You know, we don't want to be creating gangsters. We want to create warriors. We want to strengthen our people. We need to bring back that spirituality because the spirituality is what's kept us strong over all these years. It makes me think of the quote by Noel Pearson, you know. We are a much unloved people in this country. You know, 50 years ago, it wasn't safe in this country. You know, our children were taken away. I've got a cousin that's 46. He was taken away from his parents. He's younger than me. You know, he was taken away from his parents and advertised on the front of Cairns Post for sale. And he was sold. You know, this is our recent history. It's not 100 years ago, 200 years ago. This is the last 60 years ago that this happened. Now, up until 1973, we had the White Australia policy here in Australia. You know, I was born in 66. So, you know, 73 is not that long ago that we, you know, we had White Australia policies and the government had programs to breed us out. But we've survived that. We have survived that and we're here and we're getting stronger and we're looking to the future for a brighter tomorrow for all of us. You know, I think we've got a long way to go as a country, and part of that is recognising that we have the longest continuous culture on the planet, something for us all to be really proud of. You know, I long for the day when Aboriginal people are celebrated all the time, not just when we've got the Olympic Games or not when we've got something that's international and say, "Oh, look, you know, we've got the longest continuous culture in the planet. You know, look at these people, you know." Let's celebrate us all the time and let us be part of this country and take our rightful place. And I think our youth now, our youth are getting really strong. We have a lot of emerging leaders that are standing up and they're starting to take on that mantle. And I think that's wonderful because we really do need it. We need to be able to move forward. And I hope, you know, like the Uluru statement says, I want to see my grandchildren walk in two worlds and their culture to be a gift to their country. You know, for us to be able to share all of their precious gifts, as time goes on, there will be more that's revealed. There'll be more that's shared with community, but we've got to be sure that it's a safe space. And we need to protect ourselves too. And the only reason we've got to where we are now is because we have protected ourselves. As a nation, I think when our nation opens their heart and welcomes us in, I look at it and I think, look, 30 years ago, you barely seen an Aboriginal flag. 20 years ago, you never seen the acknowledgement plaque. You never seen a smoking or a welcome to country. But now it's becoming a safe place and it's being welcomed and it's being invited to do those kinds of things. You know, Australians are starting to wake up and I think this is part of the journey. You know, I often people say, oh, thank you for coming. Thank you for inviting me. You know, it's about being invited too. You know, I have a lot of people say to me, you know, how can you be Aboriginal and Catholic? Well, we've seen Jesus' story and we affiliated with somebody that's been persecuted for doing nothing wrong. We did nothing wrong in this country. You know, we've had God with us since the beginning of time. The Creator Spirit was here and our Dreamtime stories are very much like the Bible, particularly the Genesis that God picked up. You know, our Creator Spirit picked up a bit of dirt and he created man. The same things with us. Our Dreamtime stories are like the parables. They're there to teach us lessons and to guide us in how to live our lives. But we still need to find our place within that faith. And it reminds me of one of the quotes that Pope John Paul said is, you know, don't think that you have to take your spirituality and borrow it from somebody else like a pair of shoes or a hat. You know, we have our own. Why can't we wear our own? Let us share our own. I really do feel like there is a greater power. I feel like there's been a greater power in my life, all my life. And I feel like I am being pushed on to do this from an outside force. I think I'm crazy. You know, a lot of it, I think, why are you doing this? You know, I'm leaving at the end of the year, but I'm creating all this work and I'm doing this. And I just feel that there is a deeper calling from it. There is a deeper calling and it's not about me. It's about those that went before me and it's about those that are going to come after me. I hope that we can leave a mark, that we can leave something for our descendants in years to come that they can say, yeah, look, these fellas did do that. You know, they did move forward and they did create this mass. The dream would be to have it presented to the bishops at the end of this year. Whether that's a possibility, I'm not sure. Will we sink? Will we sink? I hope not. I think, you know, God works in mysterious ways. He really does. He reveals himself at incredible times. And I feel this is one time that he is really encouraging and pushing forward with it. And if I didn't feel like that, I certainly wouldn't be doing it. If I didn't feel that there was a higher power behind it, I wouldn't bother because then I would think, well, why bother? You're only going to come up against people that are going to say no. You know, it'll be something that will continue on once we're all gone and hopefully it'll be something that can be grown on in this country. But I do feel like it's a higher calling, which is an incredible gift, really. It's a gift, yeah. So as we ask the Creator to be with us in all things, as we move through our days, I'll offer you an Australian blessing. May you always stand as tall as a tree, be as strong as the rock Uluru, as gentle and still as the morning mist. Hold the warmth of the campfire in your heart, and may the Creator Spirit always work with you. By Auntie Betty Pike.
You have been listening to Australian Women Preach, brought to you by WATAC, Women and the Australian Church, and the Grail in Australia. You can find out more about WATAC at watac.net.au and The Grail at grailaustralia.org.au. The music in this podcast is from the song Truth, from the album Into Silence, by songwriter, musician, theologian and teacher Danielle Ann Lynch. You can hear the full version on Spotify.